Well, I wonder if you've ever been asked to do the impossible. It's a horrible feeling of not being able to cope, of being overwhelmed. A sense that you can't possibly meet the expectations no matter how you try. And someone or somebody is going to be disappointed in you. But you were being asked to do the impossible, right? Only Superman might succeed, and even then he might struggle. You know, that's exactly how ordinary people felt back in the time of Jesus. An impossible workload of laws, rules, and regulations were being loaded onto the people by the religious elite. And they were told unless they could keep all those rules and regulations that they couldn't be accepted, either by the elite or apparently by God too, or at least that's what they were told. And then Jesus came on the scene. And people flocked to him. Not just because of the miracles he was doing, but because of the things he was saying. Because he seemed to be opening a door of hope that had been shut in their faces. He was saying things like, "Come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden." And he was socializing with all the wrong people. Sinners, the elite would call them. These were the poor, the downtrodden, the sick, the blind, the lame, the tax collectors, the prostitutes. And he said he'd come to seek and to save the lost. These were the very people that the religious elite despised. Yet Jesus seemed to be setting his sights on these very people. He seemed to have great hope for these people who either couldn't keep the laws or had even given up trying. And yet, here's a strange thing. At times, Jesus himself seems to set the bar impossibly high. He says things like, "Be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect." He says, "Love your enemies. Pray for those who persecute you. Turn the other cheek. Bless and do not curse. Go the second mile. Love your neighbor as yourself." Well, that's no easy assignment, is it? So isn't this strange that Jesus comes, people flock to him, and he's saying things like, "You need to be perfect," but then he's bypassing the religious elite who claim that they are perfect and are doing what God requires. And he's setting his sights on ordinary people who know they can't be good enough. What's the answer then? Why is he doing that? The answer is in the grace and enabling of a God who can make the impossible possible. The answer is in a transformation in the lives of these very poor, downtrodden people that they could not live this in their own strength. The answer is in a transformation that only God can bring about, and only the poor, the humble, and the childlike can receive. Jesus sets his sight on ordinary people. He knows they cannot live this way in their own strength. They would always fail. But what if? What if they were transformed by the power and love of God? What if they were filled with the Spirit of God? What then might be possible? Jesus sets the bar high because he speaks about a kingdom lifestyle, a life that's only made possible in partnership with the Spirit of God, after being birthed into the kingdom and freed from the dominion of Satan. 3 weeks ago, Callie stood up here And she spoke about the need for us to open our eyes and see the darkness all around us. And then in faith, to advance towards those held in darkness and confront the spiritual forces of darkness that hold people. I thought it was a great message. And in one way, this message this morning follows on. But let's be real. This is a tough assignment. It's tough because to actually engage with people, with needy people, is incredibly costly. And we might feel in a church service, oh, warm feelings of, yes, this is what I want to do. But when we're actually confronted with a specific individual, with their needs, with their funny ways, things about people we don't like, we wouldn't choose that person maybe as a friend, then something within us makes us want to back off. And we realize that we just cannot do this by ourselves. But actually, that's the very key. We don't have to. Jesus sets the bar high for us and says, love your neighbor as yourself. But then he comes alongside us so that it's no longer impossible. The Apostle Paul said, I can do all things through him who strengthens me. But we must abide in the vine. Without him, we can do nothing. A guy called Danny Silk has said that the moment we decide to love, we necessarily begin a battle with fear. The Apostle John says, there is no fear in love. Fear and love are mutually incompatible. In order to love someone, we have to face and overcome fear. You know, this is not our default setting. It's not how we naturally are. When we encounter a person that we find difficult, then fear wants to rise up in us and drive us away from them. It's our instinct, it's the way we've grown up. We naturally want to distance ourselves from threats and danger. So if a person presents a threat to us, fear dictates distance. Have a goal of distance. But love always has the goal of connection. So we have to come back to the center of all this, to Jesus, and say, Jesus, you've set the bar high. You say we should love our neighbor as ourselves. You ask me to love people, all sorts of people. People who are different to me. They've got different opinions. They wear different clothes. They have different values. People with all sorts of problems. Some of them I find difficult and draining. And some of them are even rude. I simply cannot do this without you. And he says, you don't have to. If we want love to give to others, then we need to be receiving that love first. In Matthew 10, Jesus says, freely you have received, freely give. And he doesn't expect us to give before receiving. But here's the thing. What we received yesterday or the day before is not enough. We need to be receiving his love for us, every day. And we'll only be enabled to complete this tough assignment if every day we come into his presence and encounter the love of God for ourselves. Nothing else will do, only him. Now, most of us do put aside a little bit of time every day to be with God. People call it various things. When I was a young Christian, everyone called it a quiet time. I don't know what people call it today. Just say, I'm going to have my quiet time. And what they mean is they're going to spend a period of time, whether it's a few minutes or half an hour or whatever, and go into a quiet place and just be with God. But there's a danger here, okay? And this is really the heart of what I believe God wanted me to communicate this morning. There's a danger here that as we come to what we call our quiet time or time to be with God, that in fact our focus can be on ourselves rather than on Him. What do I mean? Someone you might have heard of is a guy called Henri Nouwen. He wrote a book called The Way of the Heart. And in that book, he says that we can sometimes see our Christian life as like a boxer in a fight. Some of you might be interested to know that my dad traced back our family tree. And going back a few centuries, he managed to trace it back and he found that one of their Beasley ancestors was a very well-known pugilist, I think it was called, a bare-knuckle fighter. And he became known throughout much of England, so that when he was actually in a bare-knuckle fight, people came from far and wide to see him. And there's an account that is still on record that you can find where this Beasley relative of mine, there were hundreds of people present at this boxing match. And it actually says how many of them were mounted on horseback, because that was a sign of your status in society. So, and it records the fact that he won and how much he had as his winnings, which was only so many shillings and pence, but was probably a lot of money at the time. I don't know why I told you all that, really, just to know that I'm actually descended from very poor stock. They found accounts of a Beasley being given 2 pence to buy a shirt with. So that's what I descend from. Bare-knuckle fighters and poor people. God bless them. Anyway. Yeah, so Henri Nouwen says that we can start to see our Christian life as being like boxers in a fight, with the idea that, you know, you're involved in this fight, and at the end of each round, the bell goes and you retire into your corner. And you know what happens in those few moments before the next round? You know, the trainer comes in, he's got his equipment there, and he immediately starts to massage, to oil the person down, massage their muscles, and he's saying words of encouragement, words of strategy, and then the bell goes and the guy goes back into the fight. We can start to see our time with God a little bit like that if we're not careful. You know, our lives tend to be very busy. And sometimes we can come to God in our prayer time. And we think, and we can almost have this mentality of saying, I've only got 10 minutes. God, you know, in 10 minutes' time, I've got to get back out there. This is your opportunity to meet my needs. And these are my needs. And we can start to list them out. And we might call it our time to be with God, but in actual fact, our focus has been very much on ourselves. So we might call it a time to be with God, but it can actually turn out to be another me time. And if we're like that, just listing out our needs when we come to God in prayer, actually our relationships with other people can often become the same. And however we dress up our Christian service, it can actually all end up at all about me. So how can we stop that from happening? But we need to remember that this is all about relationship. You know, if you meet up with a friend for a chat, but actually you're only interested in talking about yourself, and you don't really listen to what your friend's saying and feeling, well, what kind of friendship is that? If all you do is list out your own troubles and problems, how has that helped either of you? And you might find that your friend's not so keen to meet up with you again so soon. Even with a human friend, there needs to be a mutual interest, both speaking and listening, a genuine concern for each other's well-being. And when Jesus taught us how to pray in the Lord's Prayer, he began this way. He said, "Our Father," when you pray, say, "Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be your name." Hallowed be your name. That means, may your great name be held in reverence and respect. May your name be glorified for all that you are. May you be praised. And so the usual pattern that we're being given is that we decide to come into his presence and focus our attention on him. We come with thanksgiving and praise and a grateful heart. And sometimes that is a sacrifice. We come and in our own words we express to him how good he is, how amazing is all that he's done for us. And in the solitude of being alone with God, instead of focusing on our problems and needs, we worship him. We worship him, and as we worship, we encounter him. We encounter his love, and his spirit moves in our hearts. So by putting the focus on him and expressing to him how we love him, we find that actually we begin to change. We're transformed from the inside out. Our problems get smaller and he gets bigger. And we realize again just who we are in his sight. We start to see other people and our circumstances as God sees them. So instead of coming with a list of all our needs, we come to focus all our thoughts on him, to say that we love him. And in that, rather than the listing out of our needs, we actually encounter him and his love for us. And that's what we really need. You know, when we come to God in our own quiet time, in our own prayer, we actually need to meet him. We need to encounter him. We need to be on the receiving end of this love. Because if all we do is tell him our problems, well, he knows them already. And if we go away unchanged, then what have we done? There's also another thing that happens when we come into God's presence. Maybe not every time, but there are times when we just are made aware of our own sinfulness and falling short. I'm not talking about condemnation here, because God never condemns us. But sometimes, as we are in his presence, we just realize afresh just what he's done for us. You know, we are amazing grace, we are wretches that he has saved by his grace. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. And sometimes in his presence you can know that you are totally loved even though you are totally a wretch. That's what we are. We are saints saved by God. We are wretches that have been made holy ones in his sight. Now, being aware of just how far short you fall is a good thing. Because first of all, there are times when God, of course, he puts his finger on something that he wants us to change, and that can lead to repentance. But it's not that I've got in mind just now. It's another thing that happens as you become aware of the way that you fall short. And that is that your own self-righteousness gets stripped away. That feeling that you're better than other people. The way that we can evaluate and judge people and think, I am better than them. In Henri Nouwen's words, we come away from those times compassionate for others. Because while we still think that we're better than other people, we can't really be that compassionate. It's as you encounter people and you realize whatever situation they're in, whatever kind of need or whatever kind of problem someone has fallen into, if you in your heart know that there but by the grace of God go I, that person could be me. If I'd been dealt a different hand in life, that could be me homeless on the street if things had gone differently. That could be me arrested for doing whatever if I'd carried on as I was. That could be me. And when you realize that you're no better than other people, but you've been saved by the love of God and the grace of God, then it opens up a channel within you for the love and the compassion of God to flow through you to other people. This all happens as we come into God's presence. It can never happen by just telling God our problems. And if we were asking God for love and strength and courage to meet people in their need and go away from God's presence without actually meeting with him and being touched by him, then we go away with empty pockets still. But if we come and meet God in this way, if we are touched every day by the love of God, which he richly wants to pour out on us, then we will be equipped for what we have to do. So, we are not like boxers who just need a quick fix up as we tell our trainer our problems. We come daily into the presence of God who already knows our problems and situation. We come to minister to him, to make his heart glad as we surrender and give our lives to him again. And in the midst of it all, we find that our real needs are being met. We come away changed, strengthened, empowered to encounter people who are trapped in pain. Maybe they'll be rude to us, offensive or aggressive. Maybe they do things we don't like. But with this compassion and love of God in our hearts, we find we don't have to walk away. We can stay connected because his love and compassion are in us. And so we come full circle to where I started. It's the poor and the downtrodden, the sinners that Jesus mixed with and had great hope for, and even us, you and me, we are the ones being transformed into being channels and gateways for others who are lost and in need. Amen.